Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And today we have a particularly relevant episode. It's another one of our regularly scheduled every other week episodes where we are going to discuss one board game. We're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about the strategies you can employ if you play the game. And we're going to talk about the design of the game. So Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Rolling Realms, designed by Jamie Stegmaier and released in 2020 by Stonemaier Games as a print-and-play game that's downloadable and printable from the Stonemaier Games website. Now, specifically, we're talking about version 9. There are multiple versions available on the website. And
it's quite possible that there will be a version 10 by the time this episode is released.
Yeah. There's some changes between each version that are kind of notable. Some of them are smaller changes.
Would you call them all balance changes?
Some of them are.
They're not necessarily changes, like, just for the sake of making new versions of the game. They're usually made for good reason.
Some of them are kind of weird in that, like... Anyways, we'll get to those later, but yeah, just for reference, we're talking about version 9 specifically.
Sure.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so for a short description on what Rolling Realms is about, in Rolling Realms, players travel the realms of the Stonemaier Games catalog and must gain the most stars by utilizing the shared six-sided die rolls in the most effective manner. The gist of it is that this is a roll and write game, meaning that dice are being rolled and their values are being written down on a piece of paper and then utilized in certain ways. And this is specifically made to function across like Skype calls or Zoom meetings. Essentially, this game was designed to be very functional in the quarantine lifestyle that we're living in right now. And so the way that the game works is that only one person has to roll the dice and say what their values are. And then every player uses those values however they choose in this this grid of realms. And each realm utilizes the dice in a different way. There are 9 realms, as I said, and or did I say? No, I didn't. There are 9 realms, one for each of the Stonemaier games, and each turn, 3 of those realms are being utilized. Or sorry, each round, 3 of those realms are being utilized over the course of 3 rounds. So all of the realms end up getting used.
Yeah.
So that's the summary, and of course the goal is to earn the most stars. So let's get into the specifics of gameplay. Like I said, there are 3 rounds. Each round consists of 9 turns, and each turn you roll 2 six-sided dice, and every player records what the roll is and utilizes that roll however they want. Again, each round, you are only using 3 of the 9 realms. Each realm is only used once per game. So at the end of the game, you'll use all 9 of the realms. And the way that you use the six-sided dice differs depending on which realm that you're playing with, which realms you're playing with for that round. However, you can only use 1 die in a given realm on any given turn. So if you roll a 3 and a 6, you can use the 3 in one realm, but you cannot use the 6 in the same realm. You have to spend that 6 in a different realm. There's some exceptions to that rule, but that's the basics of this game.
Right. Each realm has their own method of obtaining stars with a maximum of 6 stars per realm. But also, as you're using the dice in these realms, you'll get resources. Mm-hmm. There are 3 resources, which are pumpkins, hearts, and coins. And these resources are available until the end of the round. So as long as you're currently in the same round, you can spend these. And each resource is spent in different increments to do different effects that all sort of modify the dice rolls for that turn, or there's one that gives you new dice or stuff like that.
Right. So let's just go through what those resources do.
Right. So pumpkins, If you spend two pumpkins, you can adjust a die plus one or minus one, meaning that if a five is rolled and you spend two pumpkins, you can instead spend it in a realm as a four or a six. You can do this multiple times to the same die. However, you cannot, like, overflow or underflow. So you can't go from one to six or six to one. Now, if you spend three pumpkins, you gain that effect, but the die that you adjust can also be used in the same realm as a die you've previously used this turn.
Right. This is the exception to the one die per realm rule. And yeah. The only exception is if you spend three pumpkins, but you must modify the die value by either plus one or minus one before you use it in that same realm.
Correct. Then
next is hearts.
Yeah.
So with two hearts, if the value of the dice are the same, so if you roll pairs, then two hearts will allow you to duplicate one of those dice and use it in another realm. In general, if you get a bonus die, you can only use it in a different realm. That's if you use two hearts. If the pair of dice are not a pair, if they don't match, then you have to use three hearts, and that lets you duplicate one of the dice.
Yeah. And then the last one is coins. You can spend two coins to duplicate a die or reuse a die if the dice add up to seven. So, you know, five and two, six and one, four and three. If those are rolled, you can spend two coins to duplicate one of those. Also, you can spend any number of coins up to six to create a die of that value.
Mm-hmm.
And that still, of course, functions with the rule that you can only do one die per realm per turn.
Right. So if you've already put a die into the tapestry realm, you cannot use a duplicated die to put another value into that realm.
That being said, you can stack these, so you can also create a die, then spend three pumpkins on it, and then get that benefit.
You could spend one coin to make a die with the face of one, and then spend three pumpkins to increment that to two, and then yes, then you could use that die in a place that you've already spent a die this turn.
Now, there is one or two more exceptions, mm-hmm. which is that you cannot adjust dice so that they're pairs, and you cannot adjust dice so that it's one, or so that it adds up to seven.
Right. So you cannot adjust a six to a seven. I imagine you cannot also adjust a one to a zero.
Yeah, there's no zeros.
Mm-hmm. There's no zeros and no sevens or higher in this game.
And then
zeros are lower.
The last thing is that when you reuse a die through like hearts or coins, you reuse it as originally rolled, which means that even if you adjusted it, that adjustment doesn't count when you reuse that die.
Yes.
So if you roll a five,
adjusting it with the pumpkins.
Yeah. So if you roll a five, adjust it with two pumpkins, so you had a six, and mm-hmm. then you reuse it, you would only reuse it as a five unless you had more pumpkins to spend.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So let's try and briefly describe what each realm does in this game.
Okay.
So starting with the top left, you have Tapestry, which is based off of Stonemaier's most recent publication.
Tapestry, yep.
Tapestry has a 6x6 grid that has been divvied into 2x2 squares. And beside that, there are six shapes corresponding with each face of the die. They're sort of like Tetris shapes, but each shape is made up of smaller squares, one square per each, you know, for the count of the die. So the one shape is just a single square. The six shape is like a stair step shape with six squares making up of it, six small squares.
Six small squares in a stair step shape.
Yes. First they champ, then they stamp. So the purpose of the tapestry realm is that whenever you spend a die there, you take the shape that corresponds with that die, and then you get to place it in that 6x6 grid. And what you're trying to do are fill up the smaller 2x2 squares with the shapes that you're making, as well as fill up the rows and columns of the 2x2 grid.
Right.
Or the 6x6 grid, my mistake.
Right. And whenever you fill up one of these 2x2 squares, you get a resource, which mm-hmm. is shown on the square itself.
Yes. And whenever you fill a row or column, you get the stars. So overall, your goal is to try and fill all of the rows and columns if you're trying to get six stars from that realm. And there are small obstacles in the way of your grid, so you can't just place any shape wherever you want. Some shapes, pretty much every square in the grid has one of the squares already filled in, and yeah, and that prohibits where you can put your shapes.
Right. Yeah. So between two cities is,
that is the next realm in this top center.
Yeah. It is a 3x3 grid, and the outside of the grid has resources shown in pairs. When you spend a die in between two cities, you put it inside the 3x3 grid in one of those squares, but only in a place that is not orthogonal to another of the number. So you cannot put multiples of the same number directly next to each other orthogonally, up, down, left, and right. When you fill in a row or a column, you get the pair of resources shown on that row or column. The way between two cities gets stars is you look at the other two realms in that round, and you get the lowest star count from either of those in between two cities as well. So if one of your other realms scored 3 stars and the other scored 6, between two cities would be worth 3 stars for you. Now, it can only be worth as many stars as there are squares filled in the between two cities realm. So even if both of your other realms scored a 6, if you only had one square filled in between two cities, then you'd only get 1 star from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the next realm top
Euphoria.
Right?
Euphoria.
Euphoria.
Right. So Euphoria has 2 zones that all have spaces for the dice sides 1 through 6.
Mm-hmm.
And
whenever you add a number to this, whenever you mark off one of these dice, you mark it off, and then you add up all of the dice that have been marked off in that zone, and then whatever you get as your total will determine what your reward is. So if your total is between 1 and 3, so for example, if you were to mark off the 2, and that's the first number that you've marked off in Euphoria, then you get a coin. If your total after you mark off a number is between 4 and 10, then you get a star. So for example, if you have the 2 and the 3 marked off, that is a total of 5. And then you mark off the 1 for your turn, then you have a total of 6. That'll give you a star. And then if your total exceeds 10, then you will get either your choice between a heart or a pumpkin.
Right.
And it's a possible of 6 points, because the way that 1, 2, 3, and 4 add up to 10, your first number will give you a coin, but the remaining 3 numbers will get you stars. And then there's 2 zones for you to do this in. There's an additional rule here where if you roll doubles for the turn, then whatever you place a number in Euphoria, you may mark off that number in both zones, and it only takes the 1 die.
Right. Yeah. All right. Next up is Scythe. Yeah, so Scythe has 6 squares in a top row, and then 6 squares on another bottom row. And each of these has a spot for the dice numbered 1 through 6. And when you mark off the top row by spending a die there, you gain a resource, which is shown above it. But then the bottom row, you have to spend a resource shown below it to gain a star. Mm-hmm. So you can gain 6 stars from this as long as you have the resources to spend when you spend the die in there as well. I believe that the numbers you mark off don't give you the same resource as they would cost on the bottom row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It should be mentioned, so in this realm and the previous realm we just discussed, Euphoria, these involve a mechanic where you're writing off, you're crossing off certain die rolls. So for example, in Scythe, there's a spot where it has the little picture of the die with the 2 face, and then a picture of the gold resource, I believe, and then a star. So you scratch off the 2, you mark off the 2, and then you spend that gold, and then you get a star. And when you mark something off in this game, it should just be noted that you can't mark it off again, so you can no longer spend a 2 in the Scythe realm to get a point like you just did.
Right.
and that mechanic also exists in Euphoria. You can't mark off the one in one of your zones multiple times. You can only do it once. And this will happen in a couple other places. But in the first two realms we discussed, when you're filling in spaces, and in a couple cases, other cases on this game, this will happen. But you can go there multiple times with the same number.
Right.
So that's just important to note. Okay. Right.
So center
next center space
is wingspan.
All right. So you can take this one.
Okay. Yeah. So in wingspan, there are three birds represented by like the card designs from wingspan. And each of these birds has a number on it, like a large number. And then they have three spaces for you to mark dice on each of these birds. And the first two spaces on each bird will give you a resource when you fill them in. So, like, the first bird has a wingspan of 7, and then the first two spaces give you a coin or a heart. So, like, the very first leftmost space will give you a coin or whatever. You can fill these in however you want, but you can only fill in one die per space on each bird. So, the first time you get... if you've gotten all the resources from Wingspan already by filling in the first two spaces on each bird, you can't get any more. And then that's a total of 9 total spaces for you to write numbers in. Now, to actually get stars, you have to make it so that the 3 numbers written in one of the birds adds up to the number of the wingspan on the bird. So there's 7, 12, and 16. So like and each one is worth 2 stars if you complete it. So if you want to get stars for the 7, you have to make sure that the 3 numbers you write in add up to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then same for 12 and 16.
All right. So the center right is between 2 castles. So in this realm, there are 2 castles. The first castle has 3 rooms at the bottom, 2 rooms in the middle, and 1 room at the top. And the other castle is just 2 rooms at the bottom, middle, and top castle. So 3 levels. And you write numbers into the rooms to build the castle. And there's a rule that you cannot put a number that is larger or the same as the number beneath it. And you have to start at the bottom and build up. So you want to put high numbers at the bottom and then build up. When you finish a column of a castle, then you get a resource shown at the top of that column. And when you finish a row of a castle, you get a star. And each castle has 3 rows, so you can get a total of 6 stars.
Right. And each castle also has a space filled in for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bottom left corner is...
Charterstone.
Charterstone.
Right. So Charterstone has, again, 6 spaces for marking off dice, 1 for each die face. And then under those are crates that are blank. And when you spend a die on the top row of Charterstone, you mark the value of the other die that you did not spend on the crate below it. Then on another turn, you can spend a die to mark off all crates with the same number and get stars for each one. So let's say you rolled 2 and a 5. You can mark off the 5 on top and then put a 2 on the crate below it. Then on a later turn, you can spend 2 to mark off all the 2 crates. And then you get a star.
Yeah, if you are able to save multiple 2s in those crates, then a single 2 will net you a number of points.
Right.
You could also mark off, if on a later turn you roll like 3 and 4, you can mark off the 3 at the top of the Charterstone realm and save the 4 at the bottom. Later on, you could do that in addition to doing the 2 on another turn. So just because you've scored the 2s that you banked with some of your numbers doesn't mean that you can't later get points for the other numbers that you somehow had to bank in other crates.
Right.
The center middle or the bottom center square is My Little Scythe. So that one has 2 rings with 6 spaces on each ring corresponding to the 6 faces of the die that you mark off. The left ring is the pumpkin ring and the right ring is the heart ring. So the way that you earn points, first of all, every time you mark off one of these die faces on either ring, you get the resource for the, you know, the corresponding resource for that ring. And then at the end of that round, or you get one star every time you get a pair of dice on either ring. So if you mark off the four on either ring, then that's worth one star.
On both
rings. And then at the end of the round, if you manage to acquire 7 pumpkins over the course of the round from all of the realms, you get a bonus star. And if you manage to acquire 7 hearts by the end of the round, you get a bonus star. Right. But there's a maximum of 6 stars here that can be earned. So even if you got 6 pairs, then that means you won't get the bonuses from either ring. You only just get the 6 stars from the 6 pairs.
Yeah.
And that leaves the final space in Rolling Realms, which is Viticulture.
Yeah. Okay, so in Viticulture, when you spend a die there first, you fill in a grape, which means you circle a circle around whatever value you filled in and get a resource. Then on later turns, you can spend dice along with grapes you filled in to complete wine orders. What this means is you add the total of the die you're spending that turn with any number of grapes you filled in, and that total has to match the wine order that you want to fill in.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, you might spend a 5 here early on in the game and circle the 5. That means you can't spend a 5 like that similarly in a later turn. But then in a later turn, you might roll a 6. And you might decide to add that 6 with the 5 to get 11 and mark off the 11 wine order.
Right. There are 3 wine orders. They're 10, mm-hmm. 11, and 12, and you get 2 stars for each.
Right.
Yeah.
It should be noted that you get a resource every time you circle one of those numbers in Viticulture. And I don't think it was mentioned, but in Charterstone, whenever you mark off one of the dice above a crate, there's a resource that you gain from that as right. well. All right. So,
okay.
That's the gist of what all of the dice faces do. And I think that took a pretty good chunk of time. So before we get into strategy, why don't we drop a little promotion for some of the things we got going on?
Yeah. All right. So you can follow us on social media at BG Broscast and get updates for, you know, when our episodes go out, get teasers for our new episodes, stuff like that. You can also go to our website at bgbcast.com to find our episodes there, all the tags for those episodes, find other episodes for other games we played and covered and so forth. You can also find our TeePublic store through that website at teepublic.com/user/BGBcast? Yes. Question mark? Okay, yeah. Where you can find t-shirts with our logo on it, and let us know through social media what sort of apparel you'd be interested in wearing with our logo on it and such. You can also I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 4 or 5 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of games. I speedrun. I do a lot of roguelites. I play fighting games. So come check that out if you're interested in a good old stream.
All right. I also stream on Twitch, usually on Wednesdays. That's twitch.tv/radicalhawks. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs. Cool. All right. Actually, I believe it's Jeff Craig Design. No S at the end. All right. So that's our plugs. So now let's get into strategy and design.
Yeah.
So I really only have one point of strategy to mention here.
Yeah.
And that is because the way that this game is played, you're constantly like shuffling through all these different realms. Each realm kind of combines in a slightly different way with another realm, and we can't cover all of the combinations. So I have just a sort of rule of thumb to how you can strategize any given round with any given combination of realms. And that is to just identify whether the numbers you care about are high numbers, low numbers, or specific numbers. Because depending on which you need, then you just have to prioritize a different resource, acquiring a different kind of resource. And then everything from there just comes to like understanding how to best utilize a die number any given turn, because you can't predict what die rolls you're going to get. So the best you can do is get the resources that best help you achieve the numbers that you need. So for example, if your turn has, if that round has, let's use Tapestry as an example. Tapestry is all about filling in a grid with specific shapes, which means that you need specific numbers. And the best resource for that is pumpkins, because pumpkins let you adjust any die number one higher or lower. And usually between two die numbers, you'll get a very specific number. Tapestry also kind of benefits from having small numbers just to fill in the gaps at the end of a round. So gold is also good, because gold, you can just spend one or two gold to get a small dice, like a one or two die. So those two resources in combination will tell you that those are the, I mean, that's what you need. And so in your throughout the game, as you're placing numbers, prioritize acquiring those resources so you can maximize that realm. And you just do the same thing for every other realm for every round. And I think that's the best way to play this game, is to just sort of identify the key resource for any given round.
Exactly. Hearts are better for large numbers, because otherwise it's hard to copy those numbers.
Mm-hmm. And pumpkins aren't reliable at getting those numbers necessarily. Pumpkins are also all right at getting large numbers, but yes, hearts are usually the best way of getting large numbers.
Yeah, and coins are probably the best way of getting small numbers, because
exactly,
yeah, you can roll two dice, put them in whatever realms you want, and then you can make a one in one realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then
now it's important to note that, like, you can only place you only have two dice every turn. You can only place one die in every realm, and utilizing the resources is important in this game, just because we like to talk about how, like, taking extra turns or having turns that generate more value or more tempo is very good in, like, any game you play. And the way that you do that in this game is by having a third die every round. And so you just get that third die by utilizing your resources to duplicate dice or generate new dice in the case of coins. And so you just want to make sure that those dice that you're generating, not only are you doing it consistently, but you're also doing it in the most effective way.
Yeah. I have three specific notes for three specific realms.
Okay.
So Tapestry, I think it's best to try and fit two sixes in the grid. I say try because, you know, you can't guarantee rolls, but mm-hmm. like, if you could use your hearts or pumpkins on one number, at least put a six in the grid somewhere, because that will help you finish off, like, one row or column.
I think the way that it's laid out, if you have two sixes in Tapestry, you can finish three squares completely. So you can get three resources from that, and then you're not far away from finishing a row or a column, or multiple rows and columns.
Exactly. Euphoria, try and start with a four on at least one side of the on at least one zone, because so you can get a three, or you can get three stars if you have, like, a one, and then you kind of build from there.
Mm-hmm.
Having a four means that you can get four stars from one of those zones by going 4-3-2-1.
Right.
And that gives you a lot of leeway with the other side, because, you know, even if like you only get two stars from the other side, then the side with the four on it, you can try and focus on getting four stars. And it's mm-hmm. also really smart that way, because then you have a good place to dump coins. Between two cities, use coins for ones. You can get four ones to fit or you can get five ones to fit non-orthogonally. Ones,
yeah. So yeah, make an X with ones.
Yeah, so this is, like, the best place to use coins for ones for quick, cheap resources.
Mm-hmm. If I had to give another point of strategy, I would say that you want to, I mean, it's a rule that you can only put it one die in a realm per turn. Occasionally you'll use three pumpkins to cheat that rule, but I think that doesn't happen too often in this game. Because of the three resources, I find pumpkins to be, like, the least useful. At least because, again, they don't generate that third die. So because of that, you need to plan your turns ahead, knowing that you'll only be able to put one die in every realm. Just in sort of, like, a sort of high level sense, And sort of what I mean, like, just to give an example, what that means or what that looks like is, like, in Wingspan, when we were playing, I had two numbers in two of my eggs, and that means I needed to add a third number at some point, and both of them needed two added. The number didn't really matter, but I just knew that, like, I couldn't fill in both of those squares on the same turn. So I had to make sure that on my second to last turn, I filled one of those squares in, and then on my last turn, I filled the other one in. So I was getting those points.
Right.
Yeah. If I had ignored that, then I may have left them both blank on my second to last turn, and then gotten to my last turn and realized that I could not finish both Wingspans.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess also just always be earning points. Like, always make sure that when you're placing something, placing a die in, just as a rule of thumb, when you're placing a die in a thing, you want to make sure that eventually it's going to be getting you points.
Right. Oh, I completely forgot to mention this when I described the resources, but okay. Every unused resource at the end of a round is 0.1 points, mm-hmm. or 1/10 of a star.
Yes.
So in the last round, if you have resources, but spending them wouldn't give you any more stars, don't spend them. Because yes. even if it's like 0.4 left over, so like four resources being 4/10 of a star, that could beat mm-hmm. ties.
Right. Yeah. Those tenths of a point. Yeah. Sometimes they can. Usually they're just for beating ties at the end of the game. Just yeah. having a couple tenths of a point ahead of somebody else. Yep. So yes, it can help if, like, yeah, to save those on your last turn if they're not going to net a new star.
Yeah.
All right. But in general, you should be spending them, because I think, like, banking those resources just for their points and not spending them, like, in the middle of a round, usually doesn't net as many points as it would if you had spent them.
Yeah.
It's just like at the end of the round when you realize, like, nothing you do with them is going to net you a star.
Especially okay. realms where you can spend one die and, like, finish something to get two resources. Mm-hmm. So, like, between two cities, you fill out a column, you get two resources. If you spent two coins in there to fill in two ones, then you only need to spend one die to remake that point difference.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right. Shall we get into the design of this game?
Yes.
So, I guess the first thing we should point out is that every realm is extremely mechanically flavorful representative, reminiscent of the game that it represents.
Yeah.
So the way that you utilize the dice in each of the realms resembles the way that you play, or the mechanics in the games that they correspond to.
Right. I really appreciate the way some of these function.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the more interesting interpretations is in Charterstone. Because, like, you know, Charterstone's a legacy game. It's about carrying the game stuff between sessions.
It's also a worker placement game.
Right. But in Charterstone, you know, it's about carrying the stuff from one session to the next. Mm-hmm. And this is represented by it being a realm where you mark off, you know, something from one turn and it becomes relevant later. Yes. But, like, and I mean, this kind of, I guess that description fits a lot of things, but more so than other realms, it's like the choice you didn't make is relevant later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or yeah, viticulture obviously fits the, like, growing grapes part of viticulture by making its grapes an investment. You invest the die, and then you get to spend it later on.
Yeah, you let it age.
Yeah.
I mean, do we just go through all of them and just point out, like, the way that it matches it?
If you want.
It wouldn't be... Yeah, we might as well. So, like, sure. Tapestry is just resembling the city mechanic in that game, where yeah. you fill up squares to get resources and columns and rows to get points. That's exactly how it works in the game. It's just a more simplified version of that.
Yeah.
What's next? Between two cities? I'm actually not too familiar with this game, but yeah. I assume it has to do with constructing cities by placing squares in a grid, and that's sort of what you do with this game, or with this area. Except yeah. this one, you build them disjointedly sometimes, and I think in the main game, you probably build them all in one cluster.
Yeah.
But because you can't place the same thing adjacent, I think that that might have something to do with Between Two Cities.
Yeah.
Euphoria. Euphoria is a pretty interesting choice. Also a worker placement game, but they decided to match the way that in Euphoria you're trying to maintain a balance of obtaining resources versus making your civilization too knowledgeable that they're in a dystopia.
Well, this is like literally how it works in Euphoria, because the workers in Euphoria are six-sided dice.
Sure.
And when you place them in the resource gathering area, they stay there. And when other dice are placed, you total up the value of your workers in that area to figure out which resource you get.
Right.
And the ideal is to be in this middle where they're not too high, but not very low. And that's like exactly how it works in this game. Which is really fun.
Let's see. Center left.
Scythe.
So this that is... one, it pretty obviously mirrors the upgrades, or not the upgrades, the but just the player board. Action placards.
Yeah, the factory board.
The factory board, right, where the top of the board is a thing that you get, a resource that you get, and the bottom of a board is a development that you make. So in this case, the top of the grid is resources you gain, and the bottom of the grid is points.
Yeah.
And then the center square.
Wingspan. Yeah. Wingspan, it's sort of like the birds often have like pretty specific requirements to get them. With like resources, but also there's a lot of mechanics that literally just ask you to know, like, you know, this applies to birds with this wingspan, or like birds that are predators eat birds with a specific wingspan. Additionally, it kind of fits for a game that's like semi-educational or factual, that like the mechanics in Rolling Realms are about getting it exact. You know, like fitting it to real life, I think is sort of part of it.
So the next one is Between Two Castles. Obviously you're building a castle. Between Two Castles doesn't really have a thing about like rooms above rooms having to be smaller, because there's no size in that game. But you do have to build rooms on top of rooms. You can't build rooms that just hang over the abyss,
right? And there are,
at least that's a little flavorful.
There are open air rooms that can't be built above.
Sure. I guess there's sort of an incentive to build tall buildings.
Yeah.
To sort of correspond to like getting resources by finishing towers.
What I think is interesting is that both the castles, for one thing, there's two castles, which is obvious. Because you're building two castles. But that each castle has one room filled in, which is like the throne room that you start with.
Sure.
It's a little fun.
We talked about Charterstone. My Little Scythe. I'm not too familiar with My Little Scythe, but they're hexes, so there's that. I don't remember if there's anything about making pairs between the two resources.
Yeah.
In My Little Scythe. But yeah, they're hexes, so there's that. I guess in My Little Scythe, you get resources by putting people on... Actually, I don't remember. We're going to have to play My Little Scythe sometime.
Yeah, and Between Two Cities.
Yes, and Between Two Cities, and do episodes on those. Yes. And then Viticulture, we've talked about that too.
Yeah. Each realm is like a translation or sort of... What's it called? You know what I mean. A remake of, or it's inspired by the original source.
So one more thing I want to talk about with design is that this game actually kind of works better when you're on a Zoom call and you can't see what other people are doing on their sheets. If you're playing in person, you can just kind of like look over at other people's player boards, and you have to decide whether like what you were going to do with your dice is a better idea than what they did with their dice. Or you have to like, I don't know, just kind of push past that and say like, oh, I looked at your thing and now I kind of want to do that too. Should I do it? Because if you do, then you'll just end up with a tied game. And if you don't, you have to either like know that you're going to be better off, or you have to just convince yourself like, that your idea will end up being better, possibly. There's randomness in this game, so that's not necessarily always the case that like one player is always making the best possible play and copying them is the way to go. But if you're playing over Zoom, I mean, you could just sort of make an agreement not to look at each other's cards until you've already used your dice. But if you're playing over Zoom or over some other video conferencing thing, then you can't really see each other's play mats, and so you can't really see what other people are doing with their dice. So it makes the game like a little more fair and a little more, you know, functional. You don't have to worry about cheating, or you don't have to worry about like second guessing yourself after peeking at what other people are doing.
Right. I kind of have to disagree a little bit.
Okay.
For one thing, so the way the resources work, you have plenty of opportunities to spend resources, and like you can use them in so many different ways and combinations, or you could hold on to them, that like it's pretty unlikely that people will do the exact same thing. Even if like you see somebody putting the two rolled dice in the same positions, you might have a better idea of how to spend resources just because there's so many different ways you can spend them and gain them. And I think that helps sort of diverge the paths that the players have. So, like, you know, even if you spend those rolled dice the same way, the fact that the resources can be so different in how they impact the rest of the game means that, like, the players will still usually be in different... you know, different point values by the end.
Also, maybe, but I mean, if you can see what other people are doing on their boards, you can see how they're spending their resources.
Right. I think there's also an interesting metagame aspect to be said about being able to look at other people's boards and try to estimate how many points they're making. So like maybe you don't want to copy somebody, but maybe you just see that they're making these many points and you need to invest your resources to beat that amount. I'm not saying like this is good. I'm just saying like it's different than just somebody saying I'm going to copy them.
It does help that you can like see other people's point values in like a video conferencing environment. You could just sort of ask like at the end of every three rolls, like what people's stars are looking like.
Yeah.
I'd say that's fair. But I mean, to go back to that, like if you see other people's point values and you say like, okay, so this is what I have to do for the rest of this round to make up for, you know, that deficit that I have against them, then that just means that you weren't looking at their stuff to begin with at the start of the round. So it's not really an issue in this case. Like you started off the round not caring what other people were doing with their dice, and now it's come to a point where you're like, okay, now I need to figure out what I need to do for the rest of the round. I think my point is just mostly for the start of the round, like openers and stuff like that, and where you go from there. It's a little less interesting when everybody's just using their dice in the same way, and getting like the same openers, the same resources, the same potential amount of points. I think it's way more interesting. The game ends up being more interesting like in that scenario where you notice that there's a deficit, so you need to get very creative with your points, or maybe you were planning on spending that gold this way, but since you realize this, now you need to spend it another way.
I think though, to some extent, why are you playing this game if you're just going to copy off of another player all the time?
Sure. And I mean, there's ethical questions there, but in most games, there's some sort of hidden information that prevents people from doing that kind of thing, or some sort of simultaneous turn taking, like drafting and then revealing at the same time,
right,
that prevents that kind of thing from happening. But I'm just saying, when you play this game in person, because the way the game works, where you roll the dice and then everyone gets the same roll and uses them in the same way, it's slightly different. A similar issue could be brought up with a game that we've discussed, Tiny Towns. And the only thing that prevents there being symmetry in how you utilize your stuff is like every player has a special building that they might want to build, but using that building isn't necessarily the same impact, like differentiating strategies. Some people don't even like use their special building in that game. But that said, you can't know what other people are planning in that game. So there's sometimes when it comes to your turn and you choose the resource, and that could disrupt, you know, whatever like every other player was doing and what every other player was like copying each other doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's like a player controlled element in that game for disrupting and creating like asymmetry. In this game, because it comes down to dice rolls, which are random that you don't control, and like placing them in this grid that everybody uses the exact same of, there's just like this greater chance for there to be symmetry. So I'm just saying, like, it's nice playing over video conference where you can't see what each other are doing, so that it breaks the symmetry right away.
Right.
And creates sort of divergent strategies.
One thing I do like about like this game functioning online, for one thing, you can play it correspondence. Because, or like, you can do, so like when you roll the dice, there's a part in the paper, on the sheet of paper, where you can mark down what the dice rolls are. And this is really helpful because, so you can like roll an entire round or an entire game of dice rolls, and then give somebody the dice rolls, and then they can play along with it that way. So even if you're not at like the same time, you can do this like correspondence style play, mm-hmm. which I believe Jamie Stegmaier did a video of him doing the roles and then playing himself. And then like you can follow along and play along at home,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is really interesting for, you know, a print and play game in this day and age.
Sure.
So I think also the desire to be like this quick print and play is kind of at the game's disadvantage. So like the big thing is that some rules are explained pretty well, but there's a lot of weird corner cases that come up super quickly. So like, for example, when you have Charterstone in your round, if I make a die with coins and I mark off the top row in Charterstone, what do I put on the bottom row? And this isn't really well explained anywhere on the paper itself, to the point where it feels like you need to print out the separate FAQ sheet. And I mean, this is how board games work. You know, you have the rule book and you have the game. That's sort of like a standard. But it feels weird as like somebody who's wanting to play a print and play game to have to download the game and then have to download a separate sheet that's a separate download.
Mm-hmm.
To like have the full context to play the game.
Sure. That might just be a question of whether it's a reasonable ask to have to do that.
Right.
At least in this game, since you're going to be playing it over like Skype, really only one person has to have that extra bonus sheet. And then everybody else only has to have their one printed copy to play.
Right. Like, I just feel like if you're going to make it a downloadable game, at least include them together.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because if the rules aren't explained well enough on the one page, then just make it two pages.
Oh, are you just saying it's a pain to have to download two PDFs?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, I think that's sort of a fair... I mean, like, it's really nitpicky, I know.
Sure.
I just think, like, you know, there's a desire for this game to be a one-page game, but it just doesn't feel like it can be a one-page game.
Right. I think it's just the variety of what you do in this game. Like, it's not just about adding dice together and doing simple math. It's like every realm attempts to use the dice in a slightly different way. And because of that, it takes up a lot of space and creates a lot of complex rules that you can't just simply explain. I think the game does its best to explain it. But like you said, like, we came into situations where it was a little unclear and we had to figure it out.
Right.
Another
thing is that a lot of the version differences are just like clarifications. Like, mm-hmm. I believe between version 7 and 9 somewhere, they added the text in Tapestry that says that you can use the same number multiple times. Because, mm-hmm. like, everywhere else where there's these die face symbols or one-time use, you know, Euphoria, Charterstone, Scythe, My Little Scythe. But when they're in Tapestry, they're not one-time use, so they had to add that exception.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a nice thing about making a print and play game is that you can have patches, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it'd be nice if it was more clear, like, this game is being currently updated or worked on. Because it feels like open playtesting right now, which I'm okay with. It's just, like, I kind of would have wished there was more of an indication that that's the case. But I think it is, like I said, like, kind of cool that print-and-play games can be updated to fix balance issues or to clarify rules better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that as a positive.
Yeah. It's like, if you're going to have a print-and-play game, you might as well take advantage of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any other design points for this game?
I really like the parts that are interconnected. I think for a game where, like, you're doing segments of the game, where there's, like, you know, X segments and you use a subset of that set every round, you know, basically in this case, the realms. Mm-hmm. I like it when there's interconnectivity between them because it makes replays more interesting. Like, the My Little Scythe and Between Two Cities rounds, those are what make me want to play the game more. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, I kind of want to see how they interact with other things.
Sure.
And I think if you're going to make this, like, you know, you use a subset of the game for this game, it's a kind of good idea to consider what kind of combinations can you make, and then how can you encourage people to want those combinations to appear? You know, it's typical, like, showing depth and then making it worthwhile to pursue that depth, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, you can maybe, like, have, like, certain predetermined written out, like, use these in this combination for interesting gameplay.
Oh, yeah. That's like, you know, in Dominion, they have example kingdoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, that'll be the end of our episode on Rolling Realms. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And we have discussed many of these games that this game references. Scythe, Charterstone, Between Two Castles,
Euphoria.
Viticulture. Have we done a Viticulture episode?
I don't know. I know we did Euphoria. I don't think we
have. But we did do Euphoria. And we did Tapestry. So check out all those on our website and stay tuned for us to, I guess, discuss the ones that we haven't yet. So, and Between Two Cities, Viticulture, and My Little Scythe and Wingspan.
Yeah. And whatever the next game Jamie Stegmaier makes involving getting stars.
Yes. Look forward to the future of this podcast as we discuss all of those. Thank you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
See ya.